Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you so much for joining us today. Joining me today is Sean Finnegan.
Chomp chomp.
And Brian Malkowitz. You have not been on the show in a while. It's good to see you again.
Thank you for having me. It's been a while. I think it's almost been a year since I've been on a Fireteam Chat episode.
About?
Any dedicated watchers are probably like, who?
C-Team, yeah. Brian Malkowitz.
C-Team. Wait, C-Team?
I know. CJ and Fran are out. They were there for the IGN first recording. They were there for
Guardian Con.
Yes. Yep. It was so awesome getting to meet everybody at Guardian Con. Let's talk about what's coming up on the show. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Bungie Day and a little bit about what it means to Guardians on the internet. We're also going to talk about our IGN first coverage and go over some of the things we discussed. And we're also going to tease a few things we have upcoming for the community. Guys, don't forget, if you're listening to the audio version of this show, thank you. And if you have some time, please take a moment to leave a review as it helps us grow. All right, Brian, Sean, Bungie Day, it is the 10-year anniversary of the first day it started. Celebration items were originally given out on Xbox Live, and that included like gamer picks, dashboard stuff. The Halo 2 Blastacular map pack was made free. Fast forward to today, they're giving us some awesome 4K wallpapers, and they're doing a little film festival about your finest moments in Destiny. So to celebrate that, I thought we would do our entry right now, live on the show. Talk about some of our finest moments in Destiny 1 as we move into Destiny 2. So, here we go. One of my finest moments in Destiny was definitely my Flawless Raider attempt. I remember it specifically, exactly like it's happening right now, especially the jumping puzzle part.
You can see it in your mind's eye.
Well, I remember the jumping puzzle.
The jumping puzzle part because, I mean, I have the VOD of it. You can hear the whole team's like exasperated gasps as I jump and I hit that geometry and it tries to force me off and I like jump to try and save it and I manage to hit the ledge and then we go to the end and it's intense because like you could fall off the ledge, you could stand with the shield too close to the thing when you're taking down Atheon, but we did it. I got that Flawless Raider trophy in year one. That's probably one of my favorite memories in Destiny. What about you, Sean?
My memory is a Trials-related memory. We were playing on Pantheon. This is like one of the very first weeks of Trials you know where the flag spawns on the raised platform in the middle of Pantheon? So it was a 1v3, and I was trying to snag the flag because the only way I thought I could beat all three players was to ninja the flag from them. So I'm sprinting towards the flag. I come out through the waterfall area, and they're already there. And this is during the heyday of like the last word for me. And I remember I killed one right off the bat. His buddy tried to res him while the other guy jumped up on the flag. I killed him, and then I turned around and just no scope sniped him in the head, and I won the round. And my team was like, oh, we had one of those moments. And I don't know. There's just so few feeling – like there's such – you get such a feeling of like badassness or like you're such a baller when you come out on top of a play where you were definitely not supposed to come out on top. I think that has to be my top memory in like the first year of Destiny. There are many, but mine has to be PvP related.
Basically, every time I have the final kill in Crucible, I feel like it's one of those moments.
Anytime.
Oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. That was cool. Yeah. Brian, what about you?
So mine is also Trials related. As you guys know, and probably Finnegan more, is that I am bad at PvP. Like, it's just so much to the point where I just make PvE my main primary thing to do in Destiny. So,
this one time I got a kill.
This one time I got a kill. No. So I think it was Bodum and you, I believe. Maybe it was somebody else, but we were doing trials. Yeah. I know you were there. I know you were there for sure. But
got this epic.
Get out of here, dude. Away with you. No, we actually went flawless on this trials run, you know, and like this is coming from a guy, and I didn't get carried that much, by the way. You know, I contributed well enough. You know, I didn't go, you know, negative on kills, but this is coming from a person who's like 0.5 KD in Crucible, you know, and so it's like, you know, after pushing PvP aside so much and then being able to go flawless once in the entirety of Destiny, that was probably my proudest and finest moment.
I actually have not gone flawless that many times.
Well, so here's the interesting thing. Didn't we go flawless, but you had an interesting hiccup, right? Or is that
no, this
thing?
Is a different time. So I tried to go.
Talking good memories.
We're talking good memories.
Good for me. Yeah. Long story short, tell the story.
There was another time. It wasn't with. I don't think you were there. It was with me and I forget who it was. But anyways, I don't think you were. But we went flawless basically. But a last minute disconnect caused me to lose out. So it was a weird glitch too, because Mercury was accessible on my directory.
Really?
Yeah, so I was able to click Mercury, like it's right there.
But it was like, sorry.
And it's like, sorry, you don't have the credentials to go here. And the other two people on the fire team.
It showed that he was one win short, both the other team, which I think it was me.
Yeah, it might have been you, but
had
the two team had it.
The full card. We could go. And Ryan could go.
They got their gear and
did they
their
invite
loot.
You in
of
and
course,
then it said no?
Of course this happens to Brian, because if any of you guys are like old school watchers, Brian is the reason we didn't complete the raid on the first day for Wrath of the Machine, because we got disconnected.
Was it me?
Yeah, you got disconnected that we were going to have it. We had access to like 5% on that last bit. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes, Brian X Bang has departed from the party. We were like,
serious? I was still in the party for maybe like 2 seconds before the internet just completely cut out, and I hear, what the?
Yeah,
and just like just complete blank.
Very.
I have a lot of bad
Brian Redbar Malkowitz.
Brian, I have a lot of bad memories, but great memories in the raid, because the first time I went to Vault of Glass with the jumping puzzle, and it took me like 30 minutes to figure that whole thing
I've
out.
I've told that story on the show.
Yeah, like that's times. Me.
This he was Brian, the yeah. one.
I was the one who couldn't do it.
I mean, we took him into the raid.
It was you, Alfredo, and like I think some of his streaming crew.
Yeah, and it was the first. Granted, it was the first. Everyone has trouble on the drum puzzle. The very first.
It was my very first time through the Fault of Glass. Forewarning.
Yeah, but. And it was really fun. It must have took him like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
To get it done
before they said, just.
All
go
of
to orbit,
sitting there watching
and we'll
with
teach you
snipers,
later.
Like, wait, like, fall. It was great.
In my defense, they were telling me to go down to that bottom ledge and jump across the thing without using the platforms that were right there.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And later it's on, I knew about
fault.
The
bad
it was bad teammates. Fault. It wasn't my fault. I didn't know about the platforms that spawned all the way to the left when you first jump in there.
I'm glad at the end it ended up being a fond memory after all. Guys, those were our memories for Bungie Day. Bungie's holding a little competition right now, and if you want to enter, you can actually send yours in. Just go over to Bungie.net and check out the weekly update this week. Moving on, however, we're going to discuss some of our coverage for IGN First. They had the open beta announcement trailer, just kind of giving you a tease and what you can expect in the beta. Here's what it contains. They said on the update, Homecoming, the opening mission and cinematics from Destiny 2's campaign. Is it the opening mission?
We don't know.
Yeah, they say that in there because
speculation about that, right?
Well, there's no some contradiction, because they say that there's things that happen before Homecoming that you do before you get
maybe
to that mission.
Yeah. Also, we've played it, and what's interesting is they've kind of positioned the opening of the game as like they take the Traveler, the Cabal take the Traveler, and the Guardians are without their light. Mm-hmm. And even in some of the cinematics, we see like
them losing their light.
Yeah, and like the ghosts disappearing, and like the kind of.
I haven't
light.
Seen that part.
Oh yeah, cool. the light like disappearing off Guardians' bodies and stuff
as they're like kind of like struggling.
Yeah,
through
but
and,
in
like,
Homecoming, you have access to your super, and if you die, you can get res.
I think
so
it's like that's I think it's just going to be a beta thing. Really,
we refer to it in the biz as a vertical slice. So that means it's like a mission where you can get an idea of what the game is going to be like.
But I think,
but not necessarily full.
Yeah, I think Homecoming is going to be that mission where it's like you at your most powerful, and then the Traveler is going to, the Cabal is going to come in. Stop the Traveler's light, and then that's where we're dropped.
I think that's how the game will progress. But I think what we're going to experience in the beta is just that Homecoming mission we played at E3.
Well, I was going to say there may even be a third part to that Homecoming mission. You know, there's the part in the tower, and then there's the part on the ship, and you never get all the way to the bottom to disable the like the thing. You get confronted by whatever, Gary.
Gaul.
Yeah.
Gary. Gaul, yeah.
And that's where it ends, right? Like, I'll bet you that third act is you lose that fight. They take the Traveler.
We've seen that in the, everyone, in the trailer. Like, he's like, let me reintroduce you
to death. Yeah, he goes, your journey.
Oh, yeah, when he kind of kicks you off of the,
Like, I bet you that's how it ends. It's like, you lose that fight. They take the Traveler. The Guardians lose their light. Yeah. And that's where, like, the beginning of the game happens.
So it's probably a chopped up mission for the beta. And there's probably extended in there. But
I had a theory that your Guardian would die. We'll have to see what happens. September 6th.
But what about August, the whole, like, your appearances come over and everything?
What happens if,
I think you die, and then your ghost revives you one last time, and then you get the Traveler's Light back and all the ghosts.
Or you die, and then your ghost revives you, and it's like, here's your character select screen. Yeah. You have to, like, redesign a whole new character. Bye.
It's going to be really, really interesting, whatever they do. We don't know, by the way.
This is wild speculation,
yeah. Also contained within will be Countdown, enter the Crucible to battle other Guardians in a brand new mode, attack or defend the base on a new map custom built to support this new game type. Control, we're going to get to play Control. By the way, we'll talk about that a little later. The original standard for Crucible combat is back with some impactful changes. Control the zones on another new map built with this objective in mind. The Inverted Spire strike at the heart of a Vex stronghold. Bring two willing allies or let matchmaking introduce you to a fire team of Guardians. New subclasses, the new fighting style for each class will be at the ready. Choose from the Dawnblade Warlock, the Arcstrider Hunter, or the Sentinel Titan. And the farm for 1 hour, you guys, on Sunday, July 23rd. We're inviting you to tour the new social space in Destiny 2, 10 a.m. Pacific. You're welcome to kick the ball into the net or befriend a chicken. His name is Ralph, by the way. Most vendors and services will be offline. Our goals are to see how many of you we can accommodate at once. That is everything contained within the beta. What do you guys think?
Seems like a hefty amount. That's good.
Crucible heavy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. But that seems like a little bit – I mean, I'm not complaining about the amount of content that's in the beta. Just a little is fine, but – it seemed like a little bit less than the Destiny 1 beta.
I don't know. Do you remember that?
Destiny 1 was two Crucible maps on Control.
But it had you could go to Earth and you had like all of Earth to explore.
Yeah, but only up until level 8, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can still go to level 20 areas.
There was a alpha and a beta. So
the alpha was like levels 1 through 8, and then the second was like one was like 8 through 15, right?
I don't think it was like 1 through 6, and the other one was like...
I think it only always capped at level 8.
I think you're right, Brian.
But
I don't know. That was a million years ago.
Yeah.
However, they have kind of talked about why they're not letting you have too much access to it. They felt like they gave away too much exploration in the beginning. And then it's like you had to grind up through that part again. And a lot of people, when they come into the full game, they're like, well, I already did this.
I mean, this is actually – this is a sentiment I've heard a lot of gamers express with sort of pre-release content, beta or alpha phases. It's like sometimes they're a little disinclined to play that stuff because they don't like the idea of having to do it all again, which is what you said.
That's how I feel.
I mean, I think it depends on what you're going into the beta to do. If it's to play and actually progress, then sure, the idea of having to do all that stuff again, that sucks. But if you want to go in there and just get a taste of what it's going to be like and see how the different things are kind of lining up or shaping up, then you're getting a good variety of different things here. You got some PvP, you got some PvE, you got the farm, some of the neat new stuff that they're introducing, and you're going to get like a little taste of it all.
That's why I kind of want to speculate that, you know, because they have the farm here for 1 hour. On that Sunday, it is a stress test, but they did that same thing with the Destiny 1 alpha. Like if you guys or the beta, if you remember, like that final Sunday, they opened up the moon for like an hour.
That's right.
So I'm kind of speculating that they might do the same thing there.
I forgot that they did that.
Yeah. Like I was really upset because I wasn't at home and I heard, you know, just on Twitter, like, oh, the moon's open in Destiny. You're like,
surprise.
And they're like, you really want to go see it. But I mean, they probably might do the same thing here, you know, aside from the farm, but
that's pretty cool.
So give us a taste of the open world, but maybe not. Who knows?
We could talk a little bit more about the farm because it was a piece of our IGN first coverage. Brian, you watched it.
I did watch it.
As an external spectator, you wrote down some questions here on our
show. Where did I put
these down? On page one near the bottom.
The farm. The farm. Okay. So I wanted to understand if the farm is going to be the main social space in Destiny 2.
So I watched the footage. I watched the footage over Brian's shoulder, and my first thought was, it's cool. A little small, though.
That's my thing. Is like, it seems a little small. Like they want to fit 26 people in here. It's like, how long can that just seem like a good social?
So, in the video that you guys watched, there's an additional area behind where I started walking in down the hill, and there's like campfires back there, and there's a house off to the left that we didn't explore, and like a long dock that we didn't show in the video because they did say that the world's going to populate more. Sure. And at the time, there were just a few people there. And they wanted us to avoid spoiler-heavy stuff. So they were like, well, let's just save that.
Yeah, because in the video, it doesn't go in a lot. You know, it showed Tyre Karn. It showed the Cryptarch and the Postmaster. But it doesn't, you know, show, like, faction vendors. It doesn't show the Vanguard. Because I'm sure in the beginning of the game, the Vanguard isn't even at the farm because they're scattered throughout
the galaxy. We were asked not to, like, go into inventory and stuff like that.
Sure.
I don't know if it's because they're still working on it or what. But, we were able to just give you a tease of the farm. Now, about the space, it does feel similar in size to the tower.
Okay.
Oh. Basically.
Okay.
So it's like you gotta be there to really understand the scope and size.
Tower kind of had like these branching sides.
It had three major branches.
But really, it's not that big, the tower in itself.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say maybe even a... Yeah, I don't want to give any comparative space because then people would be like, Destiny 2 social space is smaller than ever.
But if so, if it is the – I don't – so my prediction based on literally nothing is I don't think it'll be the main social space. Like I think at some point – you have it here in a later question about whether or not we get the tower back.
Yeah, because like part of the narrative is like we're fighting for the last city back. Right? Yeah. So you'd imagine like, hey, we want our home back.
Like, yeah. Like
we want the tower. That's our
– I'm just going to guess. I'll bet you one day we reclaim the tower and it becomes a separate social space.
Yeah.
For those guardians who have finished the campaign.
Maybe
even later in like a year or two down the line in Destiny's life if it's like added in expansions or something like that. But
yeah, because like, you know, I mean, it would still be cool to have like the Iron Temple open as well later on, you know, like I think maybe something on the Dreadnought, you know, places that we've been that we know exist in the lore and exist within the universe that we've already been inhabiting for a while. The question I have about the farm specifically is,
how do you get there?
Yeah, like I want to know. So again, I bring it up all the time. In World of Warcraft, the social spaces
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's this great MMORPG that a lot of people played for a long time. Has been going on for a while. In World of Warcraft, the social spaces are cities or outposts that are either Horde or Alliance, basically faction controlled or neutral, where both they can both Horde and Alliance
side with Gaul.
Well, what I'm saying is like. These spaces, people can come and go at will from the outer world that is explorable.
Oh, you mean like if you want to go explore the EDZ, you just like walk from the farm into
it would be like,
patrol.
It would be like you're driving around your Sparrow on Earth and all of a sudden there's like a pathway leading up into the mountains and you just take it up there and all of a sudden you're in the city. There's no loading in and all you do is go past some guards who basically make sure that like in World of Warcraft, the NPCs would just attack random mobs that try and come into the city. Or
I don't know if you can do that.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, could if I'm in the farm, could I just
walk
to the edge and then be out on Earth, like in the neutral zone?
I don't think so. I think there is an area where it's like the tower is right now. It's like, no, you can't go that far.
It's not something you
because it's like a
return to the
space.
Main area tent. That's a bummer.
But at least you don't have to go to orbit.
Yeah.
We get that at least. Well, you can just open up your directory and
open up your directory, go wherever you want to go, and it just sends you directly there as opposed to
which will
go to orbit, pick the place, then go there again.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what it entails, like, on a technical perspective, but, like, I think it would be really cool, and it would be a great immersive experience for the players if you could, be walking around in the town or in the farm, and then all of a sudden just, like, hop on your Sparrow and fly out of there, and maybe just that part inside the farm is instanced so that people can kind of come and go as you please, and once you leave, you're out of that server and into a different one where there are other players and stuff. That way you keep the populations even, but, like, having to, like, bring up the directory and go out, I think that would be a little immersion-breaking.
You do have a good note here, actually. Though they said it's dynamic, could the size grow as you play through story? I don't know if that's possible. Yeah. Like, maybe I didn't see any sections that could possibly, like, open up that I can think of. But maybe.
Yeah, the only, like, argument against that is, like, what would that look like to a guardian who hasn't progressed, right? So if you come into the farm, but, like, someone who's level 40 and they've opened up parts of the place that you have access to is like, what would that look like to them when you go to that space? You just disappear through a door that like a closed door or it's like, and then you walk up to it and it's like denied entry.
I think you've answered your own question.
Yeah. So it's like, I thought about that as a question. Like, I don't know if that would work.
And, your final question here. No, you can't kick the chickens.
Why can't
no kicking Ralph.
If you ever played Fable, you can kick chickens, and it was funny, but everybody called you Chicken Chaser for it. But
so in Counter-Strike, there are chickens on a few of the maps.
You guys are monsters.
And you can, shoot the chickens, and when they get shot, they make a noise, and people have used them to distract players before.
Really?
Because Counter-Strike's a game about sound, right? If you hear something, you're like...
What was that, Snipe?
Yeah.
Chicken abuse goes as far back as, what, like A Link to the Past?
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But
A Link to, don't quote me on
revenge.
That.
They got their revenge in Link to the Past.
Yeah. Also, it affords the opportunity, again, in Counter-Strike, like when Halloween rolls around, like everyone was surprised to see all the chickens running around in little ghost costumes.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty funny. You have the opportunity to do that in Destiny now, too.
That's awesome. I don't know if the chickens have ghost costumes. That's not confirmed.
we'll see when Halloween comes up, and then we just see chickens with like ghosts and spider web.
There's like walking pumpkins.
Yeah. We also discussed the vision piece, loadout locks.
Yeah, that was
How do you guys feel about that?
That was the most interesting piece of. I mean, it's always really cool to hear about what they think the game is going to be and what they designed the game. Like in their heads for, but the bit about having locked weapons for particular activities, they didn't confirm which activities.
Yeah, they didn't. And I don't know.
That sounds really interesting.
I think he's talking about the Nightfall.
Hmm.
Like that's the one that makes sense for me. Like a new way to like elevate the challenge of Nightfall, for example, would easily be like, hey, you got to pick what you're bringing in there before you go, and that's what you get. A way to elevate the challenge.
So I thought it might be Trials. Mm-hmm. And they might revert Trials back to, again, a more Halo-like experience where most players are using the loadout that they come in with and vying for control of preset power weapons. So, like, there's a Galahorn in a neutral spot on the map, and you have to run to grab it, and whoever controls the Galahorn spawn has a better chance of achieving their goal. Mm. I think that might be crazy.
I wonder if that would kind of contradict the, like, sense of progression that people get. It's like, hey, I worked hard for this powerful weapon. Now I want to bring that into the most challenging PvP like mode in the game.
Yeah.
So then they lock that out and like, all right, now you just go find a Galahorn somewhere in the.
Well, you're right, but maybe.
I think what he means is like you have to pick your loadout and then you're stuck with that loadout. So you would be able to bring your coveted exotic, but that's the only one you get to bring.
Or like whatever they decide to place as the power weapon there is a special version of whatever the weapon is. So like maybe it's like, you've discovered Galahorn, you have a Galahorn, you can bring that into Trials if you want, but the Galahorn that spawns in there is an iron Galahorn, and it has 5 rockets in the tube or some shit. Something.
You saved it.
That would be really, I think that might be cool. I mean, I don't know how you balance that or if that's a good idea, but it just seems like it might be interesting to me.
That's pretty cool.
Want that for like PvE, I guess that'd be like kind of cool too, but I mean, like, I guess it's less of an issue now considering like when you're in a PvE mode, you're like, oh, do I want to use a hand cannon or a scout rifle for this? And like kind of with your kinetic and your energy weapons, that's not as big as a deal now because you can have primary weapons in both slots.
Yeah.
So you're not just like, oh, this is better for scouts. This is better for hand cannons.
That's been the toughest thing for me to get used to when I have, like, let's say I equip 2 scouts that are basically the same and I have my primary scout and my secondary scout. When I swap them, I have to look. I'm like, do I have the elemental damage one on or do I have the, okay, I have the element and I have to look at my menu. And it's,
I mean, it should be down there in the bottom left.
It is down there in the bottom left, but symbol. I have to be like, which one was, okay, because I don't know the weapons right now.
Sure.
And the thing about Destiny 1 is, your secondary weapons are so unique. It's shotguns, snipers, fusions. It's pretty obvious when you have that weapon type selected, as opposed to Destiny 2 right now. It's like, I have a scout, and scout.
I had the same problem the few times that I played Destiny 2. It was like, I couldn't remember if I was on my, and I know it's not primary and secondary, but I can't remember which weapon I'm on.
Elemental.
Yeah, like
kinetic,
what I would do is like, I'll have an auto rifle as my primary, and then my... like a submachine gun as my secondary. But then as I'm looking at them, I'm like, which one am I on?
Yeah.
I think as we play that, I think we'll soon just like get into that groove and it'll just be, as you learn the weapons, you'll understand the difference between them. And then you're like, that's just something that'll be second nature.
Definitely. Yeah. You have a note on here. Will it create a meta that these weapons are the best for this? I kind of hope so. That would be really cool to see again.
But variety is the issue.
Remember when Valus Tark was like the bad guy and it's like, this is what you should bring into that encounter.
Galahorn. If you're not bringing Galahorn, you're not in this Nightfall, buddy. Get out of here.
Yeah. But then it was like, it was Black Spindle or Black Hammer at
Black
the
Hammer
time.
Back then, which I never got.
Really?
Never got Black never Hammer. Got
oh,
Black
man.
Hammer. I've so done Crota's and so many never got Black Hammer.
You have Spindle, though, right?
I have Spindle, yeah.
Spindle is the better story, I think, about getting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
exotic.
But it's also a weaker version of a legendary, and now it's exotic.
Which they basically nerfed the legendary.
Yeah.
Back to well, they nerfed.
They did because it was ridiculously good.
It was super OP.
You take out a Fallen Walker, no problem, from
100
yards away.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Anything that stands kind of still. It was really OP.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really fun weapon to use. I kind of like that they're taking it back to sort of some Destiny 1 philosophies. The controversial every gun has a defined loadout or role, basically.
Yeah.
I like that, for example, because it reminds me of year one when the vendors getting new weapons was like, what did they get this week? What's the new meta? Like, is it going to change anything in the game style? And you could go buy that particular piece that you needed. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I think it's an interesting design choice. It does raise a question, though, which you brought up, which was, and I've seen Reddit talking about this a lot, is weapon variety, right? Yeah. So if all the weapons now have, if every weapon that exists in the game has a pre-designed role and it's only that and there are no variations of it, does that mean that they're... In order to make the variation on the same level or greater than it was in Destiny 1, there needs to be way more weapons, which we don't actually know if that's confirmed or not.
Well, they
have, that's just a big question.
They have talked about ways that they can adjust weapons, even though they have defined roles and stuff like that.
I know they have weapon mods too, right? But that we don't know what they'll do.
Well, they haven't said that, have they?
Yeah.
I don't know if they've said that specifically, and like I didn't encounter anything when I was playing. So,
right.
The only thing was I wanted to say was exotics definitely give you kind of a unique experience with your weapon relationship, if you want to call it that. Like they're now more coveted than they were before because they have those extra perks that aren't going to be on the vendor rolls. So I like that. I like that exotics are special again.
I mean, as it should be. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of cool when you finally get that the perfect palindrome or whatever, right?
It's kind of fun, but that's just because that's what we know right now. When you get your perfect palindrome, when you get your perfect, well, I was going to say Hawkmoon, but that's an exotic.
Well,
just a really good assault rifle roll. Or
I think the community's worry, though, is that like once you get the weapon.
It's going to be boring.
Then what do you do? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You go it's just
because the thing we know is, all right, we need to do the Undying Mind a million times so we can get the perfect Imago loop roll.
Yeah, but in my
but
opinion,
that's what we know now.
That's not fun.
That's the problem is like, you know, people get set in their ways and it's like, that's what I like doing now. I like that grind. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, but
it's
is
like,
it more fun if you do it on your first try and get the first roll and the perfect roll and then you're like, well, now I have no reason to ever go back?
Yeah, I guess it just also depends on the loot system, right? It just depends on how they're delivering.
It just comes down to, like more rewards. Like
exactly, more rewards. It's like rewards. maybe we don't need to chase one gun all the time.
Yeah. See, we don't know all the information, and people are like, I'm so worried. It's changing. I don't know. I don't like change. But it's change just like, why don't you just wait and see what happens? Like, why freak out now? We don't even know what the game's going to be like.
Mm-hmm. Really. And if Destiny 1 is any indication, that game massively changed over its 3-year course.
Definitely. Yeah.
So,
anyway, you also brought up the lack of progress in Destiny 1. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're thinking there?
So where did I make that note? I'm just trying to see this. So that was in the vision.
Yeah.
When the vision piece where they said like, hey, there's a lack of progress in Destiny 1. It didn't really like majorly elaborate on that. So it's like, what does that mean for Destiny 2? Like what does progression look like? Does it mean that light level like changes drastically? Is there more of it? Does your guardian feel more powerful?
Yeah.
Cause right now when you level up in Destiny, you're not like crazy power. So if you go back to Earth, the level 2 enemies, you know, in the first place you spawn, you know, they're easy to kill, but you know, it's not like you feel like a god when you're fighting those lower level enemies. So it's like, do you think progression will?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, right?
I can confirm that there is a progression system, like you get new loot and it seemed to light level us up, but what I can't confirm is how that's going to work. They did say they're still tweaking things when we were playing, so I don't want to speak definitively about how the progression system is going to function because I don't know.
Right.
I don't know specifically. Well, you know, a lot of times when you do IGN first projects, you're getting early access to a game and they're like, hey, this is still being tweaked. We're not talking about that right now or that's not finalized. So we can't speak definitively, but there is definitely that light level progression game that we all enjoy.
Yeah, because we can see
that climbing the ladder.
Yeah, we already see that there's light level in the game just based off of the early gameplay. Yeah. But yeah,
I just realized we're actually running a little long. But what else did you want to ask? What you wanted about? We want to make this a new platform for years on ongoing content. So that's a good point. And Activision even said that they felt like that was a missed mark in Destiny 1, right?
Yeah, like the Destiny 1 as it stood cannot last 10 years. So it's obvious that they wanted to release, you know, numbered games like Destiny 2. Who knows if they want to do 3, 4.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the whole 10-year thing that – I think haters and people who are
cynical.
Cynical, that's a great way to describe it. The more cynical people on there say, like, this was supposed to be a 10-year game. And I don't think anyone who had a level-headed perspective on that thought about the game being a 10-year thing, but the franchise
being a 10-year thing.
But it's like, is it really realistic to have expected you to be playing Destiny 9 on your PS, on your Xbox 360?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my question here is, like, are they going to develop Destiny 2 as a platform that can last the rest of Destiny's Destiny's life cycle?
I think the answer is yes, as long as the cadence of, one, if there's a roadmap, and two, if the roadmap establishes a cadence of new and exciting and valuable content at a regular pace.
Right.
Again, World of Warcraft, man. Like, World of Warcraft,
always being
vanilla WoW.
What is it called?
Yeah, World of Warcraft. It's this
World
little
of
RPG
Warcraft.
Developed.
Tell me more about
it. Brought it up a few times.
World of Warcraft.
It's
vanilla,
hard not to compare that.
Yeah, vanilla WoW came out in 2004, and from 2004 to like mid 2005 or even early 2006, it was just that game. And then all of a sudden, you got Burning Crusade, and then 2 years after that, you got Wrath of the Lich King. Yeah. And then that's where I stopped playing, so I forget the names.
You got Mists of Pandaria,
but you got very sizable
Panda games.
Huge, yeah. Mists of Pandaria is one of them. Warlords of Draenor is the other one. I don't remember them.
Legion's the most recent.
What's the new one?
Legion is the new one, I think. But at any rate, each one of these games is, I would say, even more sizable than the Taken King was relative to Destiny 1.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like Blizzard built WoW as a platform that lasted more than a decade.
Yeah.
More than
there's never been a World of Warcraft 2.
Because they didn't need it. Yeah. And it's like, is Destiny ever going to get to that point?
I think that there's value, and Fran brought this up before on the show. There is value in calling something Destiny 3, like adding a new number to it, because it gives, and they actually touched on it in the Vision piece, where they say every game that has a number on it is an opportunity to bring in new players and expand the audience base and do something new, which is good, and I like that. But as far as the people who are there for the long haul and who want to see the game evolve over time, as long as the content comes in sizable, valuable chunks, I don't think that there's any reason that it can't come. You know, like, it'd be awesome to get it every 2 months, right? Like, or if every 3 months something big comes along. Like, wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be great.
That's what I think they wanted. I mean, they've gone into some of that stuff, right? They've already, like, they want to put more content out for the players who are hungry for content.
I think they've solved for that. We don't know how yet, but they speak confidently, like,
well, Activision specifically.
And Activision speaks confidently, we fixed that for D2.
Well, I think
because, like, the live team, you know, the live team did these updates that were cool and they were fun, but it's like, it doubles.
Well, have they still said what the other two developers they brought on to help with Destiny are doing?
PC stuff.
Is that, right? But I mean, that's, they're using two developers for PC?
I know Vicarious Visions is working on the PC port.
Okay. And then they have High Moon?
High Moon, yeah. I don't know. I don't know specifically.
So I mean,
we
like,
do have to move on though.
Because, sorry, last thought on this. Like, I just think it would be, I think Activision, obviously Bungie wants to give more, give better, awesome, more stuff to players. But I think Activision's very adamant about this because they see that they're leaving money on the table. Like, if we could deliver, I'm just saying from Activision's perspective, if we could deliver a Taken King style update every 6 months, that would increase revenue like 50%.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah, just keep people in your game. That keeps people not subscribing.
And I don't I don't think that's a bad thing. Like,
no.
I would pay for that personally. Like, Taken King was awesome. It was huge. It changed a bunch.
How much is World of Warcraft a month?
$15.
$15. And how much is an expansion that we get? Like the Taken King expansion, you know?
Yeah. $40 was Taken King. So that would be.
You pay for expansions in. In WoW, or is it just
part, like, it's a full game release, like, it's
so you have so you have to buy
the subscription is just like what you play
can,
it's
you
the
can play
cost of entry yeah.
So you don't have a subscription with Destiny, but I think that's how they're offsetting that cost, is by releasing the DLC packages. And I'm going to be very interested to see how they handle that in Destiny 2, because somehow they have to make up that revenue. I'm sure Activision's not just like, yeah,
more emotes.
We'll put those server costs.
Yeah, no, seriously. You know?
Yeah.
We have to move on. And there's a few things I want to bring up. Don't forget, two more months. This one. Until Destiny 2. 2 months, 11 days until the beta. And I did want to talk about a few things coming on the way. So on Monday, you guys are listening on Friday. And because you're listening, thank you. I wanted to let you know that on Monday we are revealing Control. I had an interview with Lars Bakken, and we interview him about the new Control game type and all the changes happening in that mode. And we also showcase the new map, Endless Veil.
Awesome.
That's what it's called. I think you guys are going to like it.
Can you tell us more about Endless Veil?
You'll see Monday. We're going to have gameplay of the Sentinel Titan. We're going to have gameplay of the Voidwalker Warlock. And it's not bad. Because I let Bungie play.
That sounds awesome.
Anyway.
You know that you're terrible.
Finally, with the beta right around the corner, sometime next week, keep an eye on IGN because we have 5,000 beta keys to give away. 5,000. Obviously, there's some technical aspects of giving you guys those codes that we still need to figure out.
Yeah.
But I'm working with Ryan McCaffrey, our previews editor here, and Bungie to ensure that we get those distributed. With that many codes, it's basically going to be like, hey, come here, sign up, here's your code, because that is a large quantity to give away. So it sounds like you have a very good opportunity to play the Destiny 2 beta on the platform of your choice. Yes, you can redeem it on Xbox or PS4. Or PC if you want to save it for later.
It's a great opportunity. Yeah. Make sure that you're subbing to Fireteam Chat and following us all on Twitter so that you don't miss out on any details of that, yeah, because we're going to be working through that and figuring out how to message that to the audience, yeah, so you don't miss it.
But also, where's my code?
Subscribe we'll make sure, to Fireteam Chat.
Yeah, we'll make follow sure us you on get Twitter. One. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll be making an announcement about that
next week. Keep an eye around Wednesday. Wednesday might be a good day to check out IGN.com. So what else do we got to do? One thing, I definitely want to say thank you to everybody at GuardianCon who came up and said hello, and everybody running GuardianCon, everybody who was involved in that process. That event was amazing. We talked about it during the live show. They raised $1.2 million for charity. $1.2 million. They blew past their goal for the year, and they're actually going to a new venue next year and elevating that.
Yeah, you guys touched a little bit about this last week on Unlocked, but I just want to echo the sentiment here. Like, this is a really special thing. Oftentimes when we work in games or if you spend a lot of time on the internet, it can be easy to get wrapped up in the cynicism and, like, the sort of negativity that comes along with games. But when it's good, man, it's great. The community has done something awesome here for charity, and it makes me proud to be part of that as a Guardian.
Yeah, and you go to this event and, like, you see these kids who the community is helping, and it's just, like, it's just so great to be part of this community who's just, like, we understand each other. We understand the grind of Destiny, and we complain and we challenge Bungie with some of the stuff that we don't like all the time. But at the end of the day, it's a game that's brought together this fantastic group of people who help others, help each other, and it's just awesome.
And that's just a testament of, like, how strong and how large that community still is after 3 years. Like, not a lot of games can do that.
Definitely.
Here's something for you. Destiny has objectively made the world a better place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It did. It definitely did. That's all we have time for today. We actually have to clear out of the studio. There's some other IGN shows happening today. So, guys, Brian, do you remember that we do an outro? Were you here when we started doing it?
I don't know. It's been so long. Is there some ritual that you guys
so we say
maybe point out the camera and do it? Do you guys want to do it?
Yes, I would love to do it. All right, so we're going to do it right now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, like, all that good stuff. And until next time...
Guardians out.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.